Previously on Dakota Town Hall.
Miles brings Hanlon into his office and says, Scott Peterson complained you put your business card on the ceiling. I didn't. Miles, I didn't. I put your business card on the ceiling. things are happening in the Capitol right now.
It is a contentious issue, especially among the Republican Party, as to how we organize our convention or our primaries.
It is the issue defining the Republican Party can't redefine itself until they figure out this issue, I believe.
Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly political podcast.
We're heading into March, and there's 5 days left in the South Dakota legislative session. Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's most listened to political podcast with Jake Schoenbeck in the East. I'm Murdoch in the West, and one of our favorite guests this week, we'll just bring him right in from District 13, Representative Tony Van Huysen. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Having an old shoe on, you know?
You're a fan.
She just fits well.
Yeah. You're a fan favorite. When we were in Pierre last week, I get like, oh, that was history. It was so good. Tony does a good job. Someone's like, I didn't think Tony would be so good, which I thought was a little backhanded.
I've had two or three people tell me over the years, you know, I didn't think I was going to like you at all. And you're really not that bad.
You are not that bad. In fact, you're pretty great and funny. You're funnier than people see coming.
I choose to take that as a compliment. I mean, you could take that a couple different ways.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it as a compliment.
Can't win everybody over. Okay, we got a big show, dudes. Hold on. This didn't even make the show schedule. Jake, a couple of things. Apologies and corrections. First things first, from last week. I feel like anybody who is in earshot of our conversation around 1 a.m. at the Ramcota Bar, which was very loud, we owe a general, hey man, gallows humor. We were just having a little fun.
Ryan Budmeier has some interesting opinions.
It's Budmeier's fault and it's Mitch Rave's fault. Dakota Town Hall is incredibly innocent
good,
in this.
Honest men sitting at a table
right.
with those two hooligans.
Trying to get everybody at church in the morning. That's what I remember, Jake.
Yes.
The Catholic service. Then I have a couple of things. Our second apology, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to, softly I'll admit, offer an apology to the community of Sioux City, Iowa. Because apparently a month ago, I think I said something awful about it. And Ben,
this came up?
Ben, I've become dear friends with Ben Nesselhoff. Remember him from 2012, head of the Democratic Party?
He was in the legislature for
before that too. Yeah, decades long history. Him and I worked together on the cannabis industry in South Dakota, and he's really funny. But he has a correction for Lee Schoenbeck.
Let's hear it.
Almost never happens. From Mr. Nesselhoff, on last week's episode, he talked about the practice of using placeholder bills that just have a title and nothing else. He said it was started by Dave Knutson in 96. That jumped out at me because Dave wasn't elected until 2002 and wasn't leader until 2006. So he missed it by a decade and he didn't have to look it up. So, Lee.
I noticed that, too. I think Lee was a decade off when he said that.
Well, I mean, he's been there for 8 decades. You're going to mix a couple of them up.
Mm-hmm.
So he was wrong. So put that in the book. He was wrong.
First time it happened, March 1st, 2024. The first time Lee Schoenbeck's ever been wrong. Oh, man.
And then I want to welcome our newest fan, too, Julie Fry Mueller's husband.
I had a fun time sitting next to him last week.
Yeah, we were up in the Senate balcony, and sure enough, who sits next to us up there? But of course, Julie Farmiero's husband. So we had a great time with him up there.
It was a real reminder of how we should be a little cooler if we can, because before everybody knew who everybody was, it was a real pleasant conversation. And you know what I mean? It was a good
delight.
He knows a ton about the Capitol, and he's given his. It was great.
And when my dad introduced me and then you, light in his eyes just went down. It was just sad.
There was a couple, and then I saw a couple people in the Senate, like, you know, oh, those some bitches. Oh, bummer. Hi, everybody. Hi.
You guys were up in the House gallery for a while, too, and I thought about introducing you, but then decided not to.
Good choice.
Good choice. We can always get it next year. Always get it. No hard and fast decisions.
That was fun. We were just sitting there waving at you guys. Right. It was fun.
But certainly, I think something we'll do every year. I think we're circling around a live show next year at Session somewhere, maybe in Gloat's Theater. But be on the lookout. That'll be fun. All right, guys, should we get into a show?
Yeah, let's get into a show.
This is such a tough one because, you know, Gnome's down at the Mar-a-Lago hitting the links, which I wanted to tee off on. But, Tony, you had such a wonderful article about it.
You did have a wonderful article on that. You kind of gave a historical look back about, you know, South Dakotans running for vice president and president. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would happen if she would leave. So
go give that a read and get a subscription to the Dakota Scout. So, Tony, I thought your point was great. Like, this hasn't happened since, like, South Dakota has rarely been on the map for presidential politics. Yeah.
And you've had a few people who maybe got just a slight amount of speculation. Joe Foss, Carl Mundt, Thune, Daschle. Yep. But never really went anywhere. Really, George McGovern is the one who did. It was the Democrat nominee for president in 72. Of course, just got destroyed by Richard Nixon.
Destroyed.
You know, I appreciate your analysis.
I mean, we can try to claim Humphrey. Sorry. Humphrey was a Huron guy, but, you know, moved to Minnesota and was elected from there. But, yeah, really, there's very little history on this.
There's a great recommended a book, that 18-day candidate book about the downfall of Eagleton. It's one of the best books, man. It's awesome.
Also, like your analysis on the kind of more recent history of vice presidents as well. Like, because, you know, you always think they have to be a swing state guy or person, right?
Oh, you hear all the time. Oh, Christie won't get picked.
Can't raise the money.
South Dakota's three electoral votes. It's a red state. Everybody thinks that you pick a running mate from a swing state to try to win it. You look at the election since 2000. That's just not true.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney was from Wyoming, three electoral votes. Sarah Palin's from Alaska, three electoral votes. Joe Biden, Delaware, three electoral votes. All those states were not swing states. Pence was from Indiana, not a swing state.
I think Kamala this is going to happen.
From California, not a swing state.
I'm more and more.
I think it's a lot more about who has the national profile, the ability to help the ticket.
In one of and these ways, Christie, the internet has changed.
Yeah, I mean there were polling in Michigan and in Wisconsin last week, I think it was, that showed that she has the highest favorables of any running mate they're talking about. I mean, not hard to imagine she could help that ticket and other Midwestern states.
Also, it's very on brand, right? Like, the whole thing's a reality show. Adding Christy Noem from South Dakota, it's just, I don't mean that insultingly, it just fits for his, you know, better or worse is what it is, you know what I mean? And he's a candidate. Well, your article certainly was like, oh, okay. It was a nice, you know, for us moderate Republicans who don't necessarily have the taste for this stuff, it was like, oh, thank you, Tony. I appreciate that. I know that's probably not what you meant with it, but it made us moderates kind of cool off a little bit. That and why we're at it, maybe we can get your thoughts on this. Is Thune going to get the top Senate job?
You know, I think he's in a great position for that. Of course, he's the number two senator, and with Mitch McConnell's health issues, he's had to step in and kind of do that job on an acting basis here and there. I know he's very well liked. And the other thing is, it's not like people haven't seen this coming.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for anybody to be like, McConnell's going to step down?
Like, really?
Come on.
Right.
He's so spry.
So Thune and Cornyn, I think, have both been, John Cornyn from Texas, I think have both been lining up people for years.
Is it John and John, right?
Yeah, and then the third one is John Barrasso from Wyoming, who strikes me as being the third, starting in third place in this deal, but I could be wrong.
I can't imagine Barrasso and Thune are differing in opinion very much on things, right? Like, one of them could coalesce around the other.
Well, they're all pretty similar in general, aren't they? I mean, they're all kind of...
I think so, and then you don't know if someone from more of the... you know, the other wing of that caucus you'd think will run. you know, more of the J.D. Vance, Mike Lee, that kind of side of the deal, Rand Paul.
Can you imagine a world where we had Kristi Noem as vice president and then John Thune as our majority leader?
That's what I'm saying, you know, running
how
this
wild
thing.
I mean, that would be.
We just got to get Lee Schoenbeck as Chief Justice, and we'll just have all the
Yeah, we're three for three, baby.
Three for three.
He's
crushing it out.
I hear he has time.
Right.
That's funny. Well, let's get into Jake. Are there bills you want to start with? Where should we take it? Let's get into Dakota Town Hall, finally.
Well, you know, Tony is our APROPS expert being on the committee, and... So let's go. Let's start there. There was a lot of appropriation bills that went through this last week. We saw funding for prisons,
couldn't find the checking account for a childcare, though, huh?
It's been a very busy couple of weeks in appropriations.
Tony, do you want to hit some of the highlights? Like, what are the big ones that went through? And
last week, we were in hearings, I think, for something like 18 hours in 4 days.
Oof.
Cranking through these bills. Last Friday, we literally passed or took action on, passed or killed 24 bills in 5 hours, about five hours and 15 minutes, maybe.
Line them up and
so it's a real long slog. Actually, this past week is a little bit of a step back for us because now these bills are on the floor and they're moving back and forth and we have to pitch them and get them going. But both houses so far have had, you know, we've all got our caucus priorities. We're dealing with the Senate back and forth on who wants what and what are we going to do. But all these bills have been passing pretty handily, even though they need 2/3 votes. But, yeah, I mean, the biggest one in terms of dollars is the men's penitentiary bill, which I pitched that on the House floor yesterday. That has passed both houses and is heading down to the governor now. That's more than $200 million that we're just setting aside.
And she signs that, authorized, right, Tony?
What's that?
She signs that.
It's her bill.
Yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. Yep. Also, we've talked about this show for at least a year now about how old our prison is, right? Like Lincoln County or otherwise. Sorry, fellas. We need a new men's prison.
We've talked about it before. No one wants a prison next door, but you're going to have to put it somewhere. And if it's on state-owned land.
As somebody who grew up in Southern Union County, where Northern Union County and Lincoln County got all the development, you're welcome for that. You can then sneak a prison in there. Sorry, guys.
Is what it is. Yeah. You know, it's kind of taking your medicine.
You're fine. It ain't going to be, no one's getting out and going to steal your pie off your windowsill. Everything's fine.
We also had final passage yesterday. I know you'll both be excited by this. David Wheeler's top priority, $4 million to build a new sheep shed at the state fair.
Yes, I have been very, very excited to hear that we couldn't find any money for childcare, but we could get the sheeps knocked out this year. That's so not fair. I'm sorry. I'm just being funny. I know it's not as simple as that, you know. I have a question. Speaking of, well, as long as we're on APROPS, was there did that airport thing go through this week? Where's that thing at?
Well, it passed out of the Appropriations Committee at $1, which is what we do when we want to keep a bill alive without committing to a dollar amount. The Senate went ahead and amended that up to $19.5 million.
Oh, that's good.
And passed it over to the House. I would say that is still very much in flux.
Oh, really? You don't think you don't think the $19 million gets through the House?
It has a lot more support in the Senate than in the House, and then also the dollar amount is in flux because we got to make all these puzzle pieces fit together here.
Okay, sure. You know, I don't know why I'm so particularly big on that one, other than, you know, it's one of them. Obvious, like, not P&Ls are a P&L, but it's such an easy ROI.
So let's go through a couple other ones. The water infrastructure bill, that's, you know, just a cool $89.38 million of ARPA funds.
Yeah, we're using
the Senate.
The rest of the ARPA funds have to be obligated this year, and then we get 2 years to spend them. So I think it looks like there's going to be about $5 million of that that's used for sort of equipment so that nurses can do more things by telemedicine when they're caring for patients, kind of make their processes more efficient.
Oh, that's good.
There's still some move. I don't know if this is going to go or not. It's still back and forth to do a little money to help the situation in the hills with the Forest Service. That's a little bit in flux, but then the bulk of that money will go into water projects. That's really the eligible use that we have where we can use it.
Sitting here in the hills, I feel like I need to defend that forest management money a little, right? Like it's stuff that the state can kick in on that the federal government won't, because they, you know, don't want to clear trees and don't want to, you know what I mean? It's one of these things where the federal government is unfortunately the expert.
Well, the federal government's the source of the problem.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a better way of saying what I was trying to say.
Yeah, because the National Forest Service is just restricting the timber industry so much, which is really a bad thing for the timber industry, but it's also bad because why are there big wildfires in California and Canada all the time? Because they don't manage their forest.
Yep.
And now these idiots are doing the same thing here, and it's going to become a real problem.
You also have to, like...
What we really need is a vice president and a Senate majority leader who understand this issue.
Yep, there we go. Right, exactly.
And then that's what we need.
Then I think we can get it solved.
It's also, too, you know, like, guys, back to the Black Hills people on the money, right? Like, if you can't, there's people out here that are certainly, agree with the federal government, you know. If you're going to restrict the timber industry, but you're going to give the mining industry a green light to high-five their way through the hills, it just seems like an easier conversation to have than is currently having. Everybody's kind of dug in immediately. Yeah. It's real weird. We have to be at a pipeline compromise by now, right? I want to be able to stop saying pipeline on this show.
Yeah, it passed the House on a 40-30 vote. I don't know if it was a surprising victory, but certainly a rare victory for the pipeline folks in the House.
You know, we had a 2-hour debate on that bill. This is not an issue that I personally have spent a lot of time on, just because I'm working on the budget and other things, but we're dealing with the same dynamic as a year ago, where the House is a little more on the protect the landowner side and the Senate's a little more on the, you know, help the project side. And I hope they can figure out a way to get that in the sink. You know, we made some amendments to the Senate bill and passed it 40-30, as you said. Now the Senate has to figure out what they're going to do with that. Meanwhile, they pretty heavily amended our two landowner protection bills yesterday morning. So those will certainly go to conference committee too. So we're going to wind up with conference committees on all three of these bills, and then they'll either work something out or they won't.
Who's all in a conference like that on these? Is it appropriations on both sides?
No. When you have a bill that goes to conference committee, there's three from each side, and the president pro tem and the speaker pick from their houses. And you need, in order to get somewhere, you need two out of the three from each house to agree.
That's interesting.
But, So there'll be a lot of negotiation around that. My prediction is that this could be the rare year where we're not, most years at the end of session, everyone's sitting around waiting for the appropriations committee to get done and the budget to get done. You have people in the back lobby playing cribbage or something. My goal is that this year that the appropriators are the ones playing cribbage.
Nice.
While these guys are sorting the pipeline bill out. That's our goal.
It'll take that long. Oh, poor Will Mort's going to have to make an extra pot of coffee and get the Cowboys in line.
There were some great photos from the House floor in the debate. Clearly in the background, there was one of Lieutenant Governor Larry Rodin, just his face kind of in the doorway, glaring in. It was really funny.
Yeah. And the other one was... He's peeking in the door. It looks very scary.
It does. And there was Julie Fry Mueller standing behind Will Mortensen, shaking her head and mouthing no while he was giving a speech. So it was a lively floor debate. People were very much paying attention to it, that's for sure.
Hey, speaking of, I want a high five to the Senate for what's that sample ballot nonsense that seems to be done. Is that done now? Done?
Yes,
they killed that bill, I think.
Yeah, that was Bethany Soy's sample ballot bill. Was that what it was?
Yes, that is what it, yep, you're right.
So basically this was a bill that would make it a crime to put basically any sort of sample ballot on a mailer, right? So my father's PAC did this, the GOP does this with kind of sending out ballots as examples of how to vote. It would have failed in a First Amendment test anyway. I mean,
that's what it is, right? I don't
immediately like it's just those. Nonsense bill.
As calmly and as nicely as possible to Representative Soy, and is that District 9? There might be, you know, buy that Schoolhouse Rock CD and like that. Maybe there's a civics class. Maybe there's a high school civics book around your town. You want to crack open and give it a spin.
Just, I think Pat Powers called it the "Boohoo, I'm not on it" bill.
Pat's becoming ungovernable on the old DakotaWarCollege.com.
He's got two pistols, just bang, bang, bang.
A little wonky with the Central Committee, and all of a sudden it's the last ride of Pat Powers.
Yeah, I mean, before too long, the Central Committee is probably going to try to hire him back.
He's still going to start shooting his guns off. I think it's kind of fun.
He's off the leash now.
Yeah, Pat Powers, ungovernable Pat Powers is my favorite Pat Powers. Let's see. What else we got for bills here? Well, actually, you know what? We're going to take a break quick. And then speaking of Pat, he wrote us the perfect don't have to work 10 seconds for a new candidate roundup.
So nice of him.
Appreciate that. Maybe if you didn't know, find out how Aunt Jemima made it into Dakota Town Hall. And I guess we got a shadows and update, unfortunately. That's all. When we come back, you're listening to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's premier political podcast.
Dakota Town Hall will be right back after a quick word from our partners.
Hi, I'm Mark Houston, the host of Doc Talk with Monument Health.
So endometriosis is a gynecologic condition where the lining of the uterus, which is what's called the endometrium, that same type of tissue implants in other places in your abdomen.
This is always kind of a weird way to phrase it too, but I think of like a human diet. And so I don't mean eating humans, please don't eat humans, but like every animal in the world has its diet, right?
So if you cut yourself and if you didn't clot, you would bleed out.
Doc Talk from Monument Health, wherever you get your podcasts.
Rapid City Business Journal, a weekly show from Home Slice Audio, focusing on the business topics inside of the Black Hills, in partnership with Elevate Rapid City and Home Slice Audio, hosted by Leslie Lane and Shiloh Francis.
And now back to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's premier political podcast.
All right, we're back with Dakota Town Hall. A little more heavy lifting before we get into some of the more fun stuff. We can't not help mention that our friend Tony here got his work requirements bill through.
Yeah, sneaky bugger.
Yeah, so that's going to be on the ballot in November.
It's going to be on the ballot.
I was telling Murdoch, I was listening to a little bit of all punk stuff, and I was into The Offspring, their Americana album, and the classic song, "You Should Get a Job." Why don't you get a job?
That's your new campaign song, baby. Tony, we'll put it in the background of the TV ad right in the Kello football games.
Well, it's good to get that.
I'm coming around.
Good to get that pass.
You know where I am on this?
Here's what it is, Tony.
Right. If everybody was like you, because your heart's in the right place, I agree. This should be in there. But you know what some people are like? Senator Pischke. So, like, it's hard to trust it is all. You know what I mean?
Well, we already do this for SNAP. We already do this for TANF. I mean, our other welfare programs, for the most part, have this.
I'm not trying to have the same ninth argument we've had 80 times on this deal. I do agree with you. I just wish everybody was like you, dude. That's just not the way it is.
Well, next week we'll be having...
Go ahead.
Oh, so I was saying next week we're going to have Ben Hansen from the American Cancer Society, who's going to give an opposition viewpoint on your bill. So that should be entertaining to kind of have someone Murdoch can talk to and be nice with.
You're right. I don't have to be the cones.
I'll probably speed through that part.
you also, during our break, mentioned that you passed five of your own bills in one day. Or they got five, got final passage.
Yeah, it was a kind of a frantic day. Tuesday of this week, I had three bills up on the Senate or on the House floor, which I had to pitch. This Medicaid bill, which got final passage. And then I was the house sponsor on two bills with Gene Hunhoff that it took two bills, but we're doing a funding swap to build a mental health unit at the women's prison in Pier. So I had to pitch those. Meanwhile, over in the Senate, I had two bills where Ryan Maher was the Senate prime for me. One of them withdraws the state from the Midwest Higher Education Compact, which is a multi-state agreement that the regents don't want to be in anymore. Don't want to pay the dues. Again, and then the other one was kind of changing.
Is there a reason why? Is there a reason why on that?
They just say they don't get any, cost $115,000 a year, and they don't think they get anything for it. And then the other one was my bill that kind of changes how the budget is, how the budgeting works for the unclaimed property, administration of unclaimed property. So kind of weird. I had 10 bills this year. Two of them I withdrew. The other eight all passed, but kind of weird to have five of them pass within about an hour of each other.
That so, seems, that must not, that can't happen very often that way, right?
Yeah, it was very odd. It just made for a very busy couple of days. Because then three of those bills were in committee the day before. I had three bills pass out of committee before 10 o'clock Monday morning. I had to go pitch.
You know what else is impressive about Tony? He then writes what is a Dickens novel of a legislative update, which is not to say that's boring. It's to say it's incredibly informative. And here's what I'm doing, and here's what happened, and here's what you need to know. It's super impressive.
I woke up couple Sunday mornings ago, and I just read that in bed, and I got like halfway through, and I was like, I gotta get up, I gotta get to church, and of course Tony's at church.
I know.
Now I'm like, Tony,
chapter
this thing's a
11, but the Thursday.
But the best part was my son Henry. We're sitting in church, and he points up ahead, and he says, "Dad, it's Jake Schoenbeck." Like, don't act so excited. Don't act.
That's right.
Calm down, kid. I've seen the live show.
For this kid.
Oh, that's good.
I'm not saying Henry's a lot. I'm not saying Henry's a lot like me, but we had our legislative procedure meeting yesterday. We only meet twice a year. It was your dad is the chair, and so this was his last time chairing this committee. Henry was at that meeting a year ago where we adopted the calendar a year ago. So I get home last night and he's like, "Have you had that meeting about the calendar yet?" I said, "Yeah, we just did that today." And he's like, "That's such a cool committee." And then he just starts rattling off. He's like, "That committee's got Lee Schoenbeck and David Wheeler and Ryan Maher and Will Mortensen and Taylor Rayfield."
What?
He rattled off like 2/3.
Will you
memory.
Please? I need to take your kid to a Guns N' Roses concert or something. We got. Otherwise, he's going to be Secretary of State when he's 17.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can remember.
Good every for you, Henry. You're my favorite Ben Heisen.
Good. Yeah, it was funny.
Well, Tony, you've had a lot of success this session, passing quite a few bills. You're very successful, unlike Phil Jensen, decided to bring up a bill that would, not bill, sorry, a commemoration, a House commemoration, commemorate the person who played Aunt Jemima, or at least was the inspiration for Aunt Jemima on the syrup bottle, which Aunt Jemima, of course, a South Dakota, you know, from South, no, it's not. There's absolutely no reason.
Why this is bill this happening? Is this some, like, we're not racist thing? Like, what has happened? What is the reasoning here?
Okay, so it was part of the like post George Floyd stuff and the BLM stuff.
Yeah, I remember they took
to remove, you know, a lot of different racial based things off of products.
Yes,
Aunt Jemima was one of those. It's now called Pearl Mill Company, I think. I know because I have some downstairs.
Cool.
But
they don't make Aunt Jemima syrup anymore.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Oh, but it's like still Pearl Milk. It's called Pearl Mill Company syrup now instead of Aunt Jemima syrup.
Oh. Well, that's stupid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So this is kind of one of those things.
I mean, you can get rid of
like,
the bottle. Yeah, like, well, whatever.
We're not racist.
The color of milk.
I don't know. It makes zero sense to have the South Dakota House do a commemoration for. I know that.
I think, well, here's what it is, guys. And like, we don't have to get into it deep, but there ain't a legislative bicameral outfit that is more older, whiter, and male than South Dakota. Us popping off on topics of racial misappropriation maybe can wait until the people who have actually had to deal with this weigh in and have their topics of it all. This is just a stupid waste of time.
I want you to understand what a commemoration actually is and how it works. Because a resolution, for example, we actually debate and it gets voted on and passes. A commemoration is really meant for, if you look at them, a lot of them are like congratulating Lincoln High School on winning the 11 AA.
This is a re-elect move to the dumbasses.
Yeah, they're mostly things like that, but they don't go to committee. They're not debated on the floor. They pass by unanimous consent, which means any legislator can object, and then they don't pass. So the Aunt Jemima commemoration, Kristen Condsett objected to it yesterday, and it did not pass.
All right. Kristen Condsett is quickly becoming my favorite Republican. We got to talk this woman into running again.
Because the optics are, like, not great for being the one that doesn't want it, right?
I just wonder, to Mr. Jensen, I don't know why you constantly give yourself this much rope. But then, I'll remind everybody, apparently, a bunch of people in District 33 must be pissed off about Aunt Jemima about something, too, because they're going to jam his ass back in for the 18th time in a row. It's crazy.
Well, in similar West River news, you guys.
Oh, God, I know. It's not
crazy
great,
stuff over
not
there.
A great week for us.
No. Chad Olson, who sexually assaulted his, allegedly, sorry.
A lot of allegedlys here. I barely allegedly. Want to talk about this, right?
Yeah, but we just got to talk about who bailed him out. Jody Fry, the sister of Julie Fry Mueller, who also, Jody Fry also ran for the legislature. Just doesn't seem like the thing that you want to be doing if you're looking to run again.
I guess I look at it this way. I bet Tony don't want to talk about this topic at all. But wait, first, Tony, do you know Chad Olson, yeah? You know who, not like you're friends with him, obviously, but you know your buddy Chad.
I guess I'm aware of who this is.
This is a West River thing for the most part, right? This guy's been out here for a long time. Anyways, I don't really want to talk about there's all kinds of internet posts about the alleged things he's up for possible jail time for. I would look at it this way, Jake, as far as the Fry-Mueller faction. That's the group. I don't mean that in a mean way, but Chad and that Mason dude and the Fry Muellers and the Citizens for Liberty and the weird gun group down in Colorado and all them Nazis that moved to District 30. That's your team. It's your big tent, man. So, I guess you got to bail out your buddies when they go to jail.
So together, huh?
Oof. Yuck.
Well, is that enough, enough hard work?
Let's talk about anything else. Jake, I think you want to loosen the tie.
It's you can't roundup.
God, Pat, could you write an update about every Thursday afternoon so we never have to? We didn't have to do any research at all.
I didn't do any. I legitimately did zero. I'm going to use past posts. I'm going to read it off mostly and kind of hit the highlights.
Let's do it. Who's running?
Senator Maher filed his petitions for District 28 House seat.
Wait a minute. He might not own that place, that burger place anymore, but that his old Maher's place up in Isabel is my best burger. It's the best burger. Dude.
Never been.
They pull the cow right up to the parking lot and butcher it right next to your car. It's that fresh.
Be fun to have him in the house next year.
Yes, for sure. We got we gotta have him. We haven't had Mar on this show yet. Ryan, we gotta. I'll reach out to you, buddy. We gotta get you on.
State Rep Kirk Chafee in District 29 is looking to move over to the state senate, replacing Dean Wink.
I think that's a good pickup.
Former guest on the show and Dean is Philadelphia Eagle, Dean Wink.
Dean's riding off into the sunset. It's too bad.
You could tell in his interviews if you listened to last week's show.
he was
awesome.
That was a lot more focused on football than anything else in that interview.
Yeah. Well, we were like, what? Because he showed us his football card. This is the bad.
Yeah, I got my sign sitting right above me right now.
Dude, he's the baddest man in 1966. Well, who else?
Did he
got,
have
Jake?
A Super Bowl?
Oh, sorry.
Did he have a Super Bowl ring? Did he have a Super Bowl ring with you? He had it in appropriations one day.
Oh, really?
And it's for when the Eagles won like 3 or 4 years ago. Of course, he wasn't on the team, but he said that they sent out to all the former players and said, "You can have your own Super Bowl ring for only $15,000 or something."
Holy shit.
Or you can get the paperweight replica for $75.
I get 10 of them $75 ones.
Right. So it's just sweet, but it's like triple the size of a normal ring. It's very fun.
That's crazy.
Well, we also have Greg Blanc, who announced earlier and has his petitions in for this 35-state Senate. This is where the newly appointed Senator Michael Walsh is, who
Greg
likely also be
Blanc?
Right again. Greg Blanc.
What's
like Sauvignon.
Do we know?
Yeah, to say it's,
do you, do
it's French, French for it's French for white. Blanc.
Your poor boy.
Blanc. Greg White.
Is it? Do we know anything about him? What do we do? What is, is he
again,
more?
Again, you know? I'm only looking at what Pat has in front of me.
Okay.
And it's just that he got his petitions in.
I mean, so. I'm just mean it this way: District 35 candidates, their announcements tend to make me go, "I better Google somebody." You know, you just gotta be careful.
Hey, that Walsh seems like
I love
good
him
center, though.
Yeah, he was
he
cool.
Seems great.
Super rad.
I've heard
it was
only
good to
good
meet
things.
Him.
He got the unfortunate seat of being next to my dad, which is probably intentional to kind of train him up into the Senate.
Now I'll never run again.
And Colbeck, Senator Colbeck, Steve Colbeck goes, "Yeah, they put me in a corner, but you can't put baby in a corner." And he's now in the far left corner of the Senate.
Oh, that's what his primary will be, the far left corner of the Republican Party.
Well. Well, we also have Aaron Allward and Carla Lems have filed their petitions. So as of now, I don't think they have any primary challengers, if I'm correct to say that.
Seems like they would pretty easy reelect in both instances there, probably.
And then we also have the
Carla Lems's district. The other House member is Kevin Jensen.
Huh.
Oh,
so there is. So that who's
this
moving,
is going to get interesting.
Senate,
yeah.
There's Carla in an open seat, so you do have the potential then to have more than one person try for the opening. But
this
I don't know who's
this is 16,
right?
Yeah, there'll yes. be. Two.
I mean, that's what's happening in my district. Is Sue Peterson is running for the Senate, so I'm the incumbent. Brad Jankert is running. Penny Baybridge is running. So it's three people running with one open seat, and then an incumbent.
That
so
will
same situation.
That will happen in 16. In inside of a month, there'll be two or three people running in 16. It's just too. It's just it became one of those districts, right? It just seems like that anyway.
We also have former House Majority Leader Glee Qualm is going to be running against Senator Aaron Tobin once again.
That is.
I thought he filed for. I thought he filed for House. Did he file for Senate?
Sorry, you are correct. I didn't finish reading that sentence. He's running for House. Got his petitions in, so he's running for House.
And he's a Republican?
So that's the...
Yes.
And that's the same situation also, where you have Marty Overweg, who's an incumbent, Rocky Blair, who's not running again. So you have an incumbent and an opening for two slots.
And that one, given, you know, that was a little tight on Tobin last time, wasn't it?
No, no.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She was, it was an ass-kicking.
In 2020, he was an ass-kicking,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, you're
61
right, you're
to 39.
Right.
Beverly Johnson, District 9 Democrat for House, has filed her campaign committee paperwork.
Well, seems like
Jeff Church has announced.
I like that choice better than the other. Never mind.
Jeff Church has announced that he's planning to run against Sidney Davis down in District 17 for Senate.
Jeff Church.
Good luck.
That's a good
yeah,
candidate.
Good
name.
Luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Davis has got a stronghold down there.
Yeah, that'd be a tough one.
Yeah.
But good for you for running, even if I think you're a goober, because, you know, that's what we need in America.
And if you've been reading the blogs for a while, you know the name Mike Zitrich. Zitrich? This guy.
Yes.
Oh, God. Did he announce?
I'm not sure. Has he ever run for the legislature before?
I want to say no, as far as I understand. But he's running in District 15 with Brad Lindworm. So... All kinds of
thoughts. That'll be the Democrats there are Caden Whitman and Eric Mucky.
Yes.
That's a little bit of a bluer district.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the honest government guy who's like always got a Facebook page in Sioux Falls?
Does he have his own blog or he posts comments on blogs live.
Yeah, he's quite a commenter, I think.
He's a commenter.
Right. He's always fighting with Pat's comments. You know, in the hinterlands of Pat's blog, right. In the outstretches of where normal civilization lives, there's his comment thread, where it's like a mixture of QAnon and the saloon from the Star Wars movie.
I think he actually banned Mike from the blog, though. I believe he can't post anymore.
Oh, God.
We also have the District 30 House primary kind of heating up. There's something like, let's see, six-ish people running for two seats in District 30.
In 30?
It's in 30. Yeah.
It seems like so.
Oh, you cut out a little. Start that again, will you, Tony?
It seems like we always have at least four or five. And we have two incumbents there, Trish Ladner and Dennis Kroll.
Mm-hmm. It's a full show over there.
So who's all in 30? Sorry, I interrupted you. It's Trish. So Trish Ladner is obviously this is where that Matthew Monfori dude is. Is that part of it? Okay.
The least Revenger lookalike.
Yep.
He's his social media is, well, I guess he's entertaining. He's a performer. I'll give him that. Who else is in this?
You know his names? Let's see. Patrick Bauman.
Is that the guy who went to is that the dude who was in DC on January 6th? I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just trying to be honest. Like, I'm pretty sure that was the. I will walk that back day one, minute one next week, but I'm pretty sure that dude was in DC on January 6th.
I don't think about that.
That'll probably get him elected in 30.
And then there are some rumors that the gone but not forgotten Taffy Howard is going to be throwing her hat in the race.
I mean, this is a little speculative. I live in 34, so I guess I take this one a little sensitive. But there's Facebook posts all over that she's in and announcing and going. Like, she announced today as we launched this show.
And, you know, that's
state Senate. That is 34.
Yep.
That is a different district for her.
Yes, that'd be brand new.
When she was in the House, she was District 33, and that part of Rapid moved in the redistricting. So she'll be going to a lot of different voters than who elected her before.
That, but like there's a stronger, you know, Jody Fry Byington, the gal who bailed out Chad. She's ran in 34 Senate for House for, you know, she's always in that thing, kind of pulling 18% historically, right? So, and Taffy makes it interesting because, you know, even though Taffy's dug in on one side of the Republican Party or not, depending on who you ask, you know, that's a lot of juice from a U.S. House race last year. You know what I mean? That's quite a bit of name recognition. He's going to be mad if I bring this up because he's not quite announcing yet. But, like, Jason, there's a guy named Jason Green. He's going to announce. He's going to run in 34. All the stuff's ready. It's already been talked about.
He's a lawyer, right?
I've met him a few years ago. He's an attorney for Monument Health right now. He was a city attorney in Rapid. That's where that's where we want in 34, right? We want listen, man, all due respect to the sensitivities of the situation in 34, we want to replace someone with as best as possible with who we had right there in that seat with Mr. Dietrich, right? And Jason Green is it, another wonky attorney who knows appropriations and knows government and isn't there to throw hand grenades. I'm in 34, so we'll talk about this for as long as I feel like. It is an impossibly easy choice.
District 34, if you look back 10 or 20 years, has had about as consistently a high-quality legislative delegation as any district in the state.
I couldn't, and you that's from, not because I live there. It's
you go
just,
from,
yes.
they had Matt McCracken, and Mike Derby was in there. He's back in. And
Jeff Partridge.
Jeff Partridge,
David Lust.
David Lust, Craig Teason, Dan Dryden.
That's just it.
Solid group.
Solid.
It's just been solid. And now Mike Derby's back in there, and Becky Drury has moved over there, also very good. It's just been kind of lights out in that district for the last 20 years.
It'd be a shame to ruin that streak. Due respect to Taffy, who I kind of like as a person, but like, there's no way you can win that seat. We can't. It'd be so terrible to the party, or to the state, or to the district, or I mean, that's my opinion, I guess. Anyway,
Taffy Howard not being elected to any position is a better thing for South Dakota.
Yeah, I don't know. There's certainly a home. Just get it. Go to 30. They love you there. You know what I mean?
The hand grenade she was tossing at the convention in 2022. We're un-Republican. I mean, that just lately.
And then this thing, like, even though I think if you showed up to this Super Trumper Ding Dong Fest here at Mount Rushmore, but, like, she was against that, too. The one time we ever agreed.
Well, I think that's all we got for new candidates.
Next week, we're going to bring on... Who's our next week guest? We're going to bring on Tony's counterpart here.
Tony's counterpart, Ben Hansen, for the American Cancer Association.
Let's do... Let's bring in Let's bring
He's not my counterpart.
No! In your an opposing argument of your workforce work requirement debate. That's how I would put it.
We'll give you a chance for a butt at some point.
I reject this comparison.
That's fair. Understandable. Well, maybe as long as we're at it. Let's bring in what's her name from the ACLU, and we'll bring in Aaron Heels. We'll bring in all these folks. And we'll call the episode Tony's Counterpart.
Tony's Counterpart.
In all the legislative hearings, the lead opponent was Kim Malsom Risden from Rivera, who I worked with she was on the executive team with me in the Dugard administration the whole time. She's a good friend of mine. Before the last hearing, I asked her if for fun she just wanted to trade sides this time, give each other's testimony. We've done this so many times at this point.
I encourage you all, if you're Dakota Scout subscribers, to read the Tony's article or any of Tony's articles to that paper. Really, there's one on this topic as we talk about it. That's, I think, incredibly. The reason I'm so big on Tony's version of it is because it was not "I'm right, we're going to jam this down your throat." It was "Hey, we heard you. We took a swing and we wrote it again, and maybe let's try this." Right? That's the process.
And next week, we will be announcing our Billies.
We got the Billies coming.
Which is going to be our most consequential bill, most ridiculous bill.
Murdoch's bill of choice, Jake's bill of choice. You should get a category, the Van Huysen Award.
Would I just automatically win? What do you have in mind?
No, you can pick your favorite bill, be it yours or somebody else's.
Oh, I get to pick.
Yeah, Yeah,
okay, we'll give you one.
And so, take your time. Think about it. We don't need it. No hard and fast decisions.
All right.
All right, everybody. We're going to... Also, I'll be live from D.C. next week, so we'll try not to screw that up like we did last year. Take two on the D.C. show.
Hopefully.
He is Representative Tony Van Huysen from District 13. He also, if this is your first or second episode that you've ever listened to, I encourage you to open up your favorite podcast player, type in Dakota Town Hall, and you can find from last summer, we did a series of historical episodes on each governor, and it was some of the most fun content I've ever made. It was great, and it's a good listen if you like this stuff.
I always say it's hilarious that we were like, let's do three episodes with Tony on governors.
Dude, I know, and then 47 episodes later.
11. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so. All right, everybody.
I got a very nice travel mug for the deal.
There you go.
You get a travel mug. Yep.
We'll up our. You know, this on year two, I think we'll be able to up our swag budget for you, buddy.
I use it on the house floor, and I've had people ask me, "Well, I was on Dakota Town Hall. Why didn't I get a travel mug?" I said, "You got to be on there 15 times before 15 you get times. The travel mug."
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Threshold.
Listen, let's see who'd be good for this. TJ Nelson, you guys got a little money for cups. We'll split some cups, and then then at the end of the show, we'll put every guest provided with a Dakota Town Hall mug brought to you by TJ's
Redstone Law Firm.
Right.
Oh, man. All right. For Tony on this instance and Jake in the East, I am Murdoch in the West. Thank you to Austin, our producer. We'll see you next week on South Dakota's most listened to political podcast, Dakota Town Hall.
See you next week.
Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly podcast. Episodes are available every Friday. For more information or to request availability, please go to dakotatownhall.com. Dakota Town Hall is presented in partnership with Home Slice Audio, produced by Leslie Klein. Music and audio production by Oakley Tai. Research by Home Slice Audio and Dakota Town Hall. Graphics by Timmy Grablander. Social media content by Scout Wheeler and website design by Trey Wynn. Editorial advisor and executive producer, Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Special thanks to all of our weekly guests. While we try to be accurate with all of our information, this show is recorded live and errors do occur. For corrections, please visit dakotatownhall.com. Hosted by Jake Schoenbeck and Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Dakota Town Hall, another Home Slice Audio production.